Everyone, welcome to Film Talk, a podcast where two gals talk film, television, and everything in between the reels. I'm your host, Elena Melendez, head of marketing and a critic here at FullCircleCinema.com, and I'm joined once again by my fellow critiques, fellow cinephiles, festival goers, and of course today we're going to be talking about the Toronto International Film Festival, also known as TIFF, also colloquially known as Tifford, because of a very anticipated movie that was very controversially removed very last minute from the festival program. We'll talk about it. Once again, you probably know these guys from our previous roundtable, which was the Festival de Cannes roundtable, but let's have everyone introduce themselves real quick. I'll start with Cole because I'm going counterclockwise. Cole.
Good evening, everybody. I am Cole, aka the Oscar expert, and just here with a bunch of festival enthusiasts to talk about everything that pertains to the great festival of Toronto. And
thank you, Mr. Amazing. David.
So yes, my name is Evan Hansen. I'm a high school student based in New York State. And I can't wait to talk about movies. My name is David Cuevas. You know what? I love this podcast. I love these film posters.
What's the podcast? No, tell us. What is this podcast?
It's Full Circle Cinema Podcast. I know what
Thank
it is.
You.
I know what it is. I'm not stupid. I'm just saying that these film posters are very...
I'm an honorary film poser, but yes.
You're honorary.
Different brand.
I know that. Don't cancel me.
He likes to mess with me on live on on main.
Exactly. Exactly. What right. A great way to start this podcast.
Yeah, the chaos is going to ensue. It won't surprise me if we start puking, screaming at each other, crying over these films. See you later. Yeah. That's how.
Give me a lot of fluids later on. Everyone stay tuned.
Oh God. Everyone stay tuned. Make sure you watch the video version
of this.
Like the
good kind of fluids.
Get wrong, off Spotify.
Gone Automobile, Gone Titan 2021.
Right. Did you already mention who you write for? Get some clout.
Oh, sure. Why not? Film Hounds Magazine. I'm the festival's editor for that specific site. You can find reviews for great festival titles, including Aloners, Vengeance is Mine, All Others Pay Cash, and Shitfast by Kenneth Branagh. So please
love
enjoy.
That. Yes. See, I love when you promote like Film House because you just go into this persona. You turn 85.
It's just so nice.
You turn 85.
I turn Dear Evan Hansen. I turn Dear Evan Hansen.
You get the wig. You get the makeup done. Yeah. Miss Josie.
Oh, hi.
Yes, hello.
Yes. Frequent co-host of Film Talk, Josie Melendez, founder of Film Posers and goer of film festivals.
Yeah, 2021 has been the year of like film festival binging.
Yeah,
you know, I'm barely dipping my toes in the water compared to y'all, especially David. you're in everything. Anyways, we're gonna kind of go through, talk about, actually I wanted to talk a little bit about, because we didn't do it last time, talk a little bit about our festival experience first, like a little brief, since, you know, of the four of us, two attended TIFF in person, physically, and then two of us, like Josie and I, attended virtually. So very, you know, varying experiences that I think it would be fun to touch on briefly before we dive into the plethora of cinema and a little bit of a festival showdown of Cannes versus TIFF in terms of the program, but we'll get into that. Who would like to start first on their festival experience? I'm gonna start calling names. Okay.
David.
Y'all gotta make me the teacher. Yeah.
Sure.
Y'all gotta make me the teacher.
Sure, I'll go.
Sure, David.
I'll see, yeah, yeah. So context being, I live in Oakville, Ontario, which is around a 45-minute GO train from here to the headquarters, which is at Union Station. So from Union Station, it's a 15-minute walk. So pretty much, I'm pretty close to the TIFF headquarters, so I have the ability to actually go without paying for any, like, extra form of accommodation, that kind of shit. Outside of, like, you know, leeching over some friends' Airbnbs, but that's not the point. Anyways, so for TIFF this year, it was very interesting because it was my first time actually attending the full festival. I've attended in the past, but only like for certain halves of the festival, either the first half or the second half, or a little bit. Like last year, I went in person to some of the TIFF Lightbox screenings, but only in the second half. But in the first half, I did virtual screenings and so on and so forth. That was kind of the gist of it. This year was my first year from beginning opening night all the way to the closing night, where I was there like all the time. I didn't miss a single day in person. I was watching movies. I was exhausted out of my mind. I was caffeinated and fully vaccinated. And here we are.
That's a t-shirt.
Yeah,
that's a t-shirt exactly. Right there. Make bank on that. That's the merch. Caffeinated and fully vaccinated. All right.
Exactly.
Cole, I believe this was your first time at TIFF in person.
Yeah, I was uncaffeinated, fully vaccinated, and, you know, my head and my heart filled with cinema and my tummy full of halal food, because Toronto's got some good food. My first time in the city, we drove up, which took like 9 hours, but it was great.
Wow.
And you know, had an Airbnb. There was a cat that showed up at the Airbnb that we let in for a little bit to just like hang around. And, you know, the movie, I didn't spend as much time in person as David over here. There were 2 days where I was just watching stuff from home and doing some editing. But I did see, you know, everything from Dear Evan Hansen opening to the 1 second closing film. So only saw 18 movies, which is an average of like 2 a day, which is not my best. It was not as productive as
it's
Sundance
not bad.
Or can. It's not bad, but it is unproductive for David's standards.
David is some Zoomer shit.
There was great you know, weather, and David was there. He didn't mention, but I was part of his TIFF experience as well. We met up a couple times.
And were you one of the Airbnbs you mooched off?
No,
nobody ever came to my Airbnb except
Aww.
For the cat.
Oh,
maybe next
the cat
year,
welcomed
maybe
you
next
to Canada.
It was a little too far. You don't need to come. You don't need to go all the way over there.
All right.
Why not?
All right. So yeah.
Maybe one day I'll leech off. I'll sleep on
day.
The floor. One day, maybe for Cam.
Josie, what was your virtual festival experience?
My virtual experience. I was burnt out, but I
Same.
Liked it.
Same.
Yeah, it was just. First day, okay, so the first day it was kind of a struggle because, of course, a lot of us experienced issues with the virtual platform. But luckily, Petit Maman did not have that problem because they knew I'd show up to Canada. So the first
You were
going to
roll up.
She's going to be like, skirt. No. So first day was well because Petit Maman, of course. But after that, it was pretty much playing a game of catch up. Watching every film before it
expired. For the first day. Yeah. That was basically my experience as well. Also, just kind of going through the emotional turmoil of things that were available to us and were not. Because there are a lot of films that we were not able to see because it was not available. It was either, like, completely barred from virtual mm-hmm. screenings. Dune. Or it was just only available in certain, like, countries. So it was geo-blocked.
Yeah.
But we saw some shit. And we were able to
enjoy. Yeah, we saw stuff. I watched like almost 30 movies, which
that's impressive to me.
Mm. That's a flex, honestly.
That is a flex.
Compared to like most people, genuinely.
Sundance, I watched like over 30, almost 40 films. So TIFF getting
record?
Close there, yeah.
It's good.
Happy,
no,
even though, again, I was dead inside by the end.
Yeah, I had to take a break on one of the last days for TIFF, so I let some movies expire. But luckily, I've recently found out that they were not worth watching.
Yeah, I think the
so it's fine.
The main thing about TIFF is that I noticed that it was mostly 3-star films, and
very
a
mid.
Lot of, yeah, a lot of them focused more on visuals than the actual story, and it kind of frustrated me. But that was my experience or my take with a couple of these.
Really like to add on to that personally, because Josie is onto something here, and I think it's all in the performative action of the film programming. And I'm going to go on a bit of a tangent here, and I hope that you can agree. So over the past few years, I had like the privilege, because of virtual festivals and just being able with Film Hounds to go on a bunch of like festival escapades, quote unquote, to watch a bunch of shit from around the globe, right? So I have like a general gist of like what were like the most notable films from festival selections. And for the Toronto International Film Festival, outside of the synonymous TIFFERD label, another label that's kind of like attached to the festival is also known as the Festival of Festivals. It's meant to play the best of the best from Berlin, Cannes, Sundance, Venice, Telluride, Tribeca, South by Southwest, even though we don't speak of that, and many, many more. So in that case, what's very interesting about TIFF is that usually they don't program the best films. They program the safe films to specifically please their 1% donors and shareholders that fund their TIFF programming kind of sphere, right? Because if you piss off a boomer, you lose your stock, you lose your inventory, you lose that delicious coffee on the sixth floor of the TIFF Bell Lightbox.
And was it Nespresso?
Will be pissed. I think so. Nespresso is a sponsor, but that's precisely the reason why. It is known as the People's Festival, but for that reason, the choices are much more safer. So in my opinion, TIFF, that's usually how TIFF is, because TIFF almost has 300 films in a regular non-pandemic year, and that's just kind of the gist of it. It's the way TIFF is. It's the way that we've all accepted it, and I appreciate for what the festival stands for. I love the prices that they give out to underrepresented filmmakers. I think they're doing a pretty solid job, but man, their programming can disappoint in moments. And for me, at least, I expected a little bit more from this year's programming compared to last year's program, because last year they actually had to work. They actually had to work to compile 50 solid movies. And when I went last year, I would say 50% of the films I saw were 7 out of 10 or higher. That's quite good. That's quite a good average. And in fact, the best film of that festival is one of the best films of the decade so far, which was True Mothers by Naomi Kawase, which ironically enough had the Cannes label at the time. And as we'll soon discuss, that a lot of the best films from TIFF are indeed from other festivals and not native world premieres. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. So that's my little rant. Thank you.
That's tea. That is the true tea. Like, conclusion to your very eloquent rant. Mid-TIFF 2021.
Yeah, the only good thing I'll say is that at least most of my favorite films from the festival were directed by women. So I did like that aspect.
Very true. Same thing for me, genuinely.
Yeah, I think the most films I've ever seen, not only directed by women, but directed like by people of color, like actual diverse directors, have been at Cannes and TIFF. Like, ever.
For me, TIFF. TIFF had
way more.
Like, Latin American films at a festival in a while.
They hit. Which is very a lot good. Of them hit very, 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 very well, and we'll get into that.
It was Holy a lot of the thoughts. Virtual. The virtual platform was, like, where you would go if you wanted to look for, like, more diverse kind of voices. Like, when I was there, obviously, since I was in person, I was going to take the opportunity to see, like,
of course,
Spencer and the Humans and, like, Dune and Tammy Faye, but like, you know, and Belfast, and but when you like lump them all together, you're like, oh, like there's, you know, that's a lot of white movies.
Yeah.
So I definitely wanted to check out some of the other ones on there. But I was looking through like to see if some of the virtual films would like come out and get like a ton of hype. One of them ended up being one of my favorites of the fest. But when I was looking on like Letterboxd, it looked like a lot of them were, as you're saying, like people are saying they're like 3-star films.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My two top films that I saw at TIFF were movies from Cannes.
Yeah.
But I still got to see like a lot of good stuff. Like I felt like full.
You were satisfied.
Yeah, I mean, but I also like was lucky that I got to see some of the in-person stuff that you didn't get to see. I remember Sundance this year was definitely more lackluster than like the year before. So I was like, no, I didn't want to like sit home and watch like 3-star movies all day, because that's what I did at like Sundance earlier this year.
Yep.
with some exceptions.
That's the thing with virtual film festivals, because you're confined to your home, but nothing beats the movie and experience in person, right? And that's right. One thing that's a little bit kind of startling to me is that, like, TIFF, as much as they do for representation, there should have been more in-person screenings for the smaller works and more of a higher platform for the smaller works, especially in the latter half of the festival, where it was honestly quite bare. That's all I will say.
The opportunity was there, TIFF.
The opportunity was there.
Hire David Cuevas.
I will make TIFF more based again.
I wanted more, like, in-person screenings in the second half. I mean, I don't know why they did it where, like, they have all the premieres happen in the first half and then they never screen again. And then the second half, there's, like, barely anything, and most of them are on virtual, so you don't even have to go if you don't want to.
Wild.
It's usually like that. It's usually like that in every single TIFF. That's the funny thing.
Oh, it is? I thought that was like a pandemic thing.
No, usually, like, sometimes they do replay screenings, but in the smaller venues. Everything that plays, like, at the Winter Garden, Princess of Wales, Roy Thompson Hall, all the major venues are either, like, the subpar premiere titles or, like, stuff that require, like, an extra, like, screening. I know there were a few additional screenings added this year for Dear Evan Hansen and The Electric Life of Lewis Wayne, because they were quite successful with audiences and because the distributor gave them leeway to say, like, okay, fuck it, why not? You get an extra screening. But in the case of, like, most years, that's usually how it'd be.
Wow. Hmm. And kind of using that as a segue into actually, like, discussing what we liked and we didn't like, Electric Life of Lewis Wayne was actually, I think, the only movie I gave more than a 7 for.
I really like that
7 out of 10. I didn't expect to love it as much as I did. I'm not going to lie. I don't know why my expectations were very mid. I think it's just such a mid festival. I was like, it'll be fine. You know, they're letting us watch this instead of The Power of the Dog. This will probably just be fine. It was very good. I cannot believe. It was a really, really good movie. My review is down below. I actually wrote a review for it. That a little clout there. But I don't know. What I do appreciate from TIFF, though I totally agree with, like, all the criticism from the festival's program, there were, with a few exceptions, quite a few movies that were actually not, there weren't all well-paced, but they had decent run times. Like, you saw a lot more 90-minute flicks than, you know, the 3-hour ones or the 2-hour flicks, you know. There weren't as many super long movies, which I really appreciated, because some of these movies went on for far too effing long. And that's what I'm saying.
It's a perfect segue to Story of My Wife, honestly.
The Story of My Wife has been traumatized.
Listen, I'll say something about Story of My Wife, and I'll be a defender to it. Forgot her first name. Fuck. The Enayedi stan.
I can find it.
On.
I'll pull it up. Hold up.
Ildiko.
Yeah, yeah. Ildiko Enayedi stan has logged on. Listen, I think it's a mess. I think it's a total mess because it doesn't know necessarily what it wants to be. Definitely it's a satire and toxic.
Mess.
It's an expensive mess. It attempts to be a critical kind of a parody and satire of the costume drama mixed in with these ironically labeled chapters. And so on and so forth. And it is sometimes funny. But the thing is, it does its costume drama so fucking well to the point where, like, you don't even know what exactly it's trying to parody. So the movie goes on and on and on, and you're bewildered. And then there's a sex scene, and you're like, oh. And then, like, more drama happens, and you're like, oh.
Yeah, we were all just like, huh.
Yeah.
All right. Oh.
I skipped.
It was art house. It was very art house.
Eating the ass. Anyways.
Yeah.
Is it the one where Vivaldi starts playing?
All of the Vivaldi. Fuck. Okay.
I think so. I was a very art house sex scene, I must say. The rule of thirds was, like, base.
Oh,
there.
The Kodak 35mm.
It came through. It was like, through. Huh. If Pornhub were for cinephiles, this is what you would see.
Speaking of movies who are just like, he just like me for real. Ahed Sni, where Nanav Lapid wrote the character, and he'd be
concerning.
Like, just like me for real. I think it's great. I saw it can. I love that movie. It's like synonyms for people who want
that
Joker
didn't like synonyms.
About synonyms for people who didn't like synonyms, but also wanted Joker, but about censorship. And there you go. That's it's neat. I already talked about it in the previous
we
podcast.
Saw it. Josie and I saw it at TIFF since we had missed it at Cannes. I called it like the cinematography felt like a TikTok transition, just constantly.
I love it.
It made me nauseous. It was
I love
like,
it for that reason.
That was my first TIFF film, and that's when I lost hope. But then my second TIFF film was Mad Woman's Ball, so.
Very true.
I regained hope and faith in humanity.
Right. Yeah, Mad Woman's Ball was based. I feel like we're kind of skipping over Cole here a little bit, but yeah. So Cole walked out of Story of My Wife.
So, at Cannes.
That's true.
So why don't you say the story about like when you whispered gently?
How long did you last,
like,
though?
I was there like an hour and 15 minutes.
That's quite a while.
And I was just like, I more want my chana on naan wrap. They had a wrap that I was getting every single day, up to twice a day, that was freaking chana masala wrapped in naan, and I wanted it really bad, and I wanted it more than finishing the movie.
You were watching The Story of My Wife, and you were like, "I need that right here."
I thought I was gonna eat before, but it just
priorities.
I wasn't vibing with the movie, you know.
It was now you know.
Even for a sea captain like me, it just
so essentially
it didn't hit me at the right spots.
It was not your Black Panther.
No, The Story of My Wife.
I thought it would be. I was really
skipped.
Excited for the representation, but I didn't. I wasn't satisfied with how they did it. I could tell it wasn't actually directed by a sea captain.
Yeah.
You really could, though. That's the problem. That was the most dramatic, just... If a sea captain... Like, this sea captain was so extra, just with every decision he made. And he just felt like... He just felt like an incel. I'm sorry.
He is an incel.
He is.
That's the funny part.
Incel?
I couldn't
in
tell.
Like,
he redacted Louis Garrel.
Oh my god! The worst person in the world. I didn't see Worst Person in the World, so I'm like the odd
the
one
space.
Out here.
I didn't
wait,
see Story of My Wife.
Listen, Cole,
yeah, but that was a skip.
If it makes you feel better, wait, Cole. If it makes you feel better, there are only like 15 other people left in the theater out of a packed crowd initially for The Story of My Wife press screening.
Oh, really? They all left?
Yeah, except for 15 other people, including me. Yeah, it was like the most walkouts in a single movie at the festival.
Ever?
See? I was...
That I've experienced. It wasn't just Cole. Almost my entire row, except me, left.
Holy crap. What was the breaking point? What did you notice
my
was the
wife.
Breaking point? Oh my god, The Story of My Wife is literally just point. European Borat. The Story of My Wife.
My wife.
So, lightning
Holy
round.
Crap. Right. Quick lightning round. You know what? Yeah, I'll do some intervals of quick lightning round.
I should probably like preface that. I don't want to flex, but I'll flex. Outside of excluding Cannes, excluding Berlin, excluding Sunday. This year I saw 44 films at this year's Toronto International Film Festival. So I've seen around 70 in total, so half of the program. So I am ready for this lightning
round. Oh my god.
My body is ready for this lightning round. You may go.
This is why you were caffeinated and vaccinated. Good lord. All right, I'm just going to throw a couple titles. You will say based or not based. Urban Dictionary definition of based here, probably. Because we're just going to do basically a cinematic smash or pass real quick, and then we'll get into it. So, real quick, Mad Women's Ball, based or not based?
Haven't seen?
Cole? All right. Well, Josie and I loved it. Very based. Very good. Horror movie, but it's very good. The Eyes of Tammy Faye.
Based.
Based. Big old based. All right. So there is, so it's not overhyped though.
I don't know who
it
was for, but
it's a little bit.
I don't know who it was for. All right.
It was for people who wanted a good time. I don't know what else.
It was a film that wanted to educate, but also parody Christians. or Catholics or whatever the fuck they're called. Whatever. And I appreciate it.
I think it just wanted to elicit empathy, but it was also like funny.
Yeah, it's very funny.
Like it was like good to laugh at them a little
bit. Yeah, it was funny. And Andrew Garfield was actually good, and I don't think people are talking enough about him.
It's basically
Andrew Garfield was actually good. When has he not? Excuse me?
No, it could, people are focusing more on like Jessica Chastain's performance because of course she is like a front runner, i.e. Oscar expert videos. But
well, you'll have to wait and see.
Yeah. But
is it because she has more prosthetics, so she has more of a chance?
It's just more people because she's the protagonist and her performance is good. So people are focusing more on her. But like show. Andrew Garfield, like I because immediately I saw him and I was like, this is a manipulative bitch. And he didn't have to do anything. It was just composure and everything. Like his acting was very subtle.
It was a Sebastian Stan moment in I, Tonya.
Yeah,
but I, Tonya is way better.
Yeah.
No, he was very showy, I thought. Like I was like, this is total Oscar bait from him. But Andrew Garfield? People weren't talking about him as much. Yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
He was very showy. He was like,
I don't think it was Oscar bait. I think it was just like him doing the whole entire parody shtick. At least when you look back at the televangelists, like how they acted on camera. It's like I don't think he's trying to win an Oscar here. I think he's just like trying to have a good fucking time on camera, personally.
That's,
like,
was he the Christian Henry McHenry?
It can be both.
Exactly, yeah.
Christian Henry McHenry.
I liked everybody's laugh. Like they were just constantly laughing, like Jessica Chastain and Andrew Garfield. They were just like, nyeh. And it was really every time they did it, and like whenever Andrew Garfield was like, Jesus loves you, I loved that. I was like really into it. Every time I felt Jesus' love.
Okay.
From Andrew Garfield.
That sounds pretty based. Same actor who did Spider-Man and Under the Silver
More based
Lake.
Than I thought.
It's called Range.
It's based.
Based.
Hell yeah. All right. I already forgot what I was going to mention next. After Blue? Yeah, After Blue, Dirty Paradise.
Based. In the hot take.
Not based. Not based for me. What's your hot take? Because I thought it was hot. It was hot garbage.
Listen, it's pure camp. Okay?
It's bad.
And the thing is, it's the same movie repeated 8 times, thrown into a blender. Put in Hayao Miyazaki's graphic novels of Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind. Put in Alejandro Jodorowsky's Fando and Liz. Blend it. Put some blood in there, and you're good. That's the movie. That's literally the movie.
Blood it's either, and like lube everywhere.
Exactly. It's either you fuck with it or you don't. And I appreciate people who don't fuck with it, and I appreciate people who do. It's pretty much, it's an impossible paradox kind of thing. And you know what? After Blue, it's not as good as The Wild Boys. The Wild Boys is a banger. That's a good Bertrand Mandico movie. But After Blue, I gotta respect it as just an acid spaghetti western on crack, sex, and rock and roll. So cheers to that, Tiff, I guess. So
I thought Josie froze for a second there and she was just appalled.
Appalled.
She blinked. She blinked, and I was like, oh, she's still with us. She was still with us.
She like completely like.
All right, so one end of the spectrum humor. Here. Miss Unbased. What are your thoughts?
I'm so
he went off. You have every right to go off.
Movie bad.
I respect that.
Yeah, it was movie. It was like, I understand what you're saying when you
Gucci
say
piss
it was
camp.
Cape Bush.
Chanel rifles. Mm. I understand what you're when you say the movie was camp.
It was.
I counter that with the movie was done by someone who has not read the essay on camp, but saw the Met. They saw the Met Gala based on camp. Rather than reading the source material. That was my take from it. It was very much, it's trying to do camp. It's like a game of telephone.
It's
20 people
hard.
Try to pass, exactly. 20 people That's try it. To like pass along the definition, like by whispering to each other, the definition of camp, and then it got to Bertrand. That's After Blue Dirk, like Dirty
No,
Paradise.
I agree. It's trying way too hard. But I guess that's
it
kind
is.
Of like the admirable part of it.
Could have been 20 minutes.
And you know what? Honestly, yeah, it could have been like Apocalypse After, which isn't very good, but it could have been like that, which is a
If it were a short film, I would have appreciated it more. High key. Because it's just a merry-go-round of just...
Not Kate
just,
Bush.
Just no. Kate Bush was
so
the subject of my nightmares. Because it's so funny because it's like everyone's speaking French, but then you just hear French, Kate Bush, just occasionally. Kate and I don't know why that's that just sent me. It just sent me to Mars. It really did. Or sent me to After Blue, because that's the planet.
But although yeah, I gotta say that, like, thoughts. Seeing it, I saw that in the Midnight Madness crowd. So everyone was kind of just dazed and confused.
Was it actually, it started at midnight?
Started at midnight. Everybody was there with masks on.
Christ.
My friend was wearing a kitty cat mask and she started sleeping, so it almost looked like she was purring while watching the movie. It was fucking hilarious. Anyways.
You are exposing her! You're exposing your friend on MAME.
It's funny. It's funny. I think she'd find it funny. Why not?
All right. Did I already mention the Electrical Life of Louis Wayne? Are we based or not based at?
I think it's based. Yeah.
It's very based.
I love nice core movies like The Personal History of David Copperfield. Just like right up that same alley. But with
that's what I was saying. It was around the same lines.
Yeah. Right. That is very true.
Very based.
Ooh. Fight! Petite Maman, based or not based?
Based, but with some reservations.
I wanted to like it more.
What color?
I didn't have that much to say about it.
that's what I wanted to do. But okay. We have a Petite Maman stan here. If you would like to mention briefly your thoughts, even though you wrote a review on it.
It was awesome. Link below. It smells awesome. Like a nice weighted blanket that smells like autumn.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bet.
It did have like good colors.
Yeah.
It had like good autumn colors.
Really the funny thing is like it has fantastic color correction, but terrible geography. Spatial geography, which is kind of
yeah, I was confused.
But that's all I will say about
it. But I think I like to believe
it was supposed
to
be like kind of confusing.
Yeah, I like to believe it was on purpose.
No, but it's also the lack of, I mentioned this in my review, but it's also the lack of Skiyama actually trying to get out of her comfort zone and trying new things with the environment. Mm-hmm. Because I've noticed this pattern in previous films, and I don't want to roast her, because you know what, Celine Skiyama, you do you, you're making films that you want to do, and I appreciate it, right? And Petite Maman is a very solid and very well-intentioned film. But in some regard, it's just like the lack of close-ups, the lack of medium shots, lack of stuff that kind of like punctuates the environment to like scenes that like are just like static long shots for some reason, nothing to further enhance the character dynamics, but largely just because of, I hate to say it, laziness, but here we are. That's all I will say, in my opinion. At least I thought the actual directional aspect could have been stronger, but the story's cute. How I Met Your Mother redux, why not?
Ew. As someone who vehemently, viciously hates How I Met Your Mother, that's cursed. That's a cursed description. All right.
I'm sorry. I've never seen How I Met Your Mother, so that's what I think
it's not about. Good. I'm sorry. I am very sorry. I know a lot of people love How I Met Your Mother. I tried. I really tried. And not because I wanted to, but I really tried.
So anyways. Petite Maman is based.
Petite Maman
is it's based. I think we all agree it is based.
All right. Quick based or not based, is it probably be a little easy, but The Power of the Dog.
Based.
Big based. Explain your
base. I think it's a fantastic meditation on grief. I think it's also an incredible portrait of repression. How almost grief can also come into the form of a literal virus. Kind of topical, isn't it? Right, and how kind of hate ideology can spread into other forms of coping mechanisms and violence and that kind of deal. It isn't until where you find your inner peace, where you could actually truly become an adoptive member of society, which in the case of the tragic finale of Power of the Dog, it really comes full circle. It makes for a fantastic double bill with Ryuzuki Hamaguchi's Drive My Car, one of my favorites. Ooh. Here.
Wait, does it? I don't know.
I think both films, like Drive My Car has a happy ending, Power of the Dog does not. But both have similar intent on how coping mechanisms, for better or for worse, can spread like wildfire, basically. And just sort of like connect people in peculiar manners.
I just want you to realize that that's a 5-hour double bill.
Yeah.
That's a 5-hour double bill, bro.
I do it.
You do it?
All right. It's base. That's a base.
You go in there with the depends. 5 hours.
Base.
All right. Cole, what's your base on Power of the Dog?
That it was a little bit of a tough one for me to like understand, and I watched it twice and I understand it better, but I'm still not like quite there. So it's like there are levels where like I can, like, if someone thinks it's a masterpiece, like I can't disagree that like it's that well done of a movie, like it's that well acted and like well woven, and there's like all these like great details that like Jane Campion does a really good job of showing, and like, I mean, that's not even mentioning like the craft of it. But you know, I like it more thinking the more I think about it, but it's like, it wasn't like, you know, the movie that I like cared personally the most about, like when watching it.
It wasn't your Black Panther.
I mean, you know, it wasn't the Black Panther. It wasn't, you know, there weren't really any sea captains in it, but, I really liked it though. I don't want to like undersell how much I liked it, but it's more like I'm probably underselling it because it's like hyped up as like one of the very best of the year and
Oscar bait.
I mean,
no, not really.
Really?
I mean, I think it might get nominated for Oscars, but not. It's actually more isolating than I thought it would be. I felt isolated on the first viewing, and I felt like it picked me up a little more in the second viewing.
Right.
It's cold and cruel. That's all I will say.
Yeah,
you gotta let it marinate.
Not warm and cheery like Belfast, is it?
That movie.
Belfast, based or not based?
Absolutely not based. Shut up, Cole.
Based.
This is not a head sneeze. This is a censorship-free zone. Like, we can agree on things. Go mm-hmm. for it.
Oh, me?
Which either one?
Do the tangent. Do what you did in the park.
Roma for white people.
Roma for white people. He's screaming in the park about Belfast.
Ginger or Black Panther.
Oh. Ooh-wee. All right.
Call your turn. Honestly, if you want to read my full thoughts on Shitfast or Belfast, it's available on Film Hounds magazine. But let's give the platform for Cole. This is Cole's Black Panther, and I feel like we need to talk about proper representation in this Zoom call.
It was Kenneth Branagh's Black Panther because he got the representation that he never had.
He never saw Brooklyn?
I think. He didn't feel represented because it wasn't about
him. Don't you dare compare that to that movie? Brooklyn is good, okay?
I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying Irish... Hello? Representation? Brana
this
really
was literally him.
Brana's Belfast never sat in a forever. Movie theater and gone, damn, Belfast they forever. Like me for real. Good lord. Okay, sorry, Cole. We dug
I
into
I have to
you.
Say, though, Belfast, nobody's talking about the lack of character development. There's, like, no character arcs.
There isn't.
It's like a movie where... It's like about a kid who has all the innocence in the world, and everybody works to pad him, and it works, and that's like what the movie is.
Mm-hmm. And, I don't think it works. And
I mean, it kind of.
You had
it,
your
it
time. You
does.
Had your time, David. You had your time.
But
continue
but
forward.
It also like it's like about the people in the movie, the family come. It's like all about this difficult decision that they have to make, and it ends up being a very. Easy decision that they just have to make. I don't know. I mean, I don't want to spoil it, but it just felt like an obvious conclusion. There was a lot going for it, but the end felt like, oh, that's it. Like that's Belfast. Like that's the Oscar front runner. Like, I don't need that.
And the
Best
People's
Picture.
Choice
like it,
Award winner this year.
Yeah, well, almost then. Inevitably. I think the acting. I thought the performances were really good. They were definitely keeping me in the movie. I don't know if I'm going to give anybody an Oscar from it, but I thought all five of the main cast members were really good. All
right.
I thought it was based. I definitely thought it was based, but you got to attack it a little bit since it's out front, I guess.
I suppose.
I think it might be time to like actually the Roma comparisons, because everybody online is like, don't compare it to Roma, but no, fuck that. This is basically Kenneth Branagh's Roma, as in both films tackle a heavy political issue. In the case of Roma, it's the student protests in Mexico. In the case of Belfast, it's the troubles the Protestant Catholic revolt, basically. And both utilize the voyeuristic kind of perspective of a child and their surrounding family members to pretty much comment on the times themselves. The thing with Belfast is that it's very one-dimensional. It doesn't know what it's doing. Like Cole said, there's no character arcs to really root it down into the ground. With Roma, on the other hand, it's specifically a societal critique, how the rich family pretty much view these protests as something that's completely sidelined into the narrative. When the narrative actually does hit, and since we're viewing this from the perspective of the maid who works for the family, it becomes clear that the family itself does not give two shits about the surrounding environment. The film is pretty much a film all about the power of environment, how environment can actually tell us more about the societal worldview than a character just completely like saying exposition or something like that. It's the power of the moving image. And because of that, we kind of see the entire economic and class divide through the eyes of the maid in the film and the family that she works for. There is no real conclusion to the film, but at least there is a statement, and there doesn't need to be a conclusion to be made. Well, Belfast, it does have a conclusion, but at the end of the day, what's the statement being made?
It's not a political one. I think it's just like about families gonna always have your back. Like, I don't know, something really simple like that.
It's something vibey.
It's a Disney Channel
no thoughts,
original.
Just vibes.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Disney Channel original.
The other lesson I took away from it was that the past is in black and white, always, no matter what.
All right.
That's cute.
Fair enough. That's cute. That wasn't shady at all.
That was not metaphorical at all. I meant quite literally.
All right.
Yeah, no. I was referring to Kenneth Branagh for doing That's cute.
Cuarón did it better.
That's cute. Yeah.
Anyways, based or not based, Murina?
Based.
Big based. I liked Murina. Big
we'll based. Let Josie talk about this one because I know she's very passionate about it. And
this was
really
her first five star.
I think it's five star.
I give it four.
Yeah. I just started crying when you saw those underwater shots, and I was like, it's just really nice, especially just the evolution, like the coming of age, and just, she was so brave, which some people might think that she's a brat. I just, considering the circumstances she was in, like, that was some horrible, not only emotional abuse, but it was also, like, physical abuse. And just to the extent that she was willing to set herself free, and of course the end was impactful because it didn't end up being what you thought it would be. And again, just the metaphor, like the ending is literally a payoff from something that is said earlier. So I also like that. It was a solid it was a directorial debut, right? Let me take that.
It was.
Perhaps.
Feature debut.
Martin Scorsese produced. Mm-hmm. He's one of the producers, so very much based.
I don't know. I just really liked it. It's one of those stories that was very simple and... After, again, because my problem was that I was seeing so many three-star films that... Because one thing I noticed with TIFF is that with those three-star films, either the first two acts were solid and then they did not have a solid conclusion and left you very upset, or the first two acts weren't good and then the final act was good and you're like, well, I don't know what to do now.
The power of averages.
And with this one, I think it maintained a fine line. Like, continually, it remained pretty strong.
Yeah, Murina, I think, was really solid. Cole, I don't know if you saw Murina. Did you catch it? It's good. It's a good 90-minute flick. Very, very vibey. Very much...
Wait, can I say something? Not about the quality of the film, but something that happened in my screening. That's actually really fucking funny. So it was the first screening at the festival for Murina. It was at the Scotiabank Theater. And we were all seated. It was a packed crowd. Very good, actually. It was like, it was a sold-out crowd for a very small movie, which is pretty nice. Mm-hmm. So, good for her. They introduced it, the movie played, and it was during the climactic scene involving an underwater sequence. I will not say any more outside of that, where you think the character might die, and all of a sudden the DCP froze. So, the whole entire crowd... was just like this one static still of the character underwater, and like everybody's like dead silent, and everybody's like groaning, just like, bruh.
Just like everybody's scream. Like, I would scream.
You're like, so like, and I was just like sitting there like in my seat like this, and just like,
yeah. Go off.
Go. Show me what's gonna happen. I was very invested. So that was actually, that made me like, wow, that's cinema. when a DCP like freezes kept... and you want to see the rest.
Wow. Yeah, but she kept building up. I really liked that because a lot of these films, like, for example, The Hill Where Lionesses Roar, I thought that it was one of those examples where, like, visually, I really enjoyed it. But story-wise, it was not as strong as its visuals. And at least Murina was just nice. No. Murina was nice to see how the story continued to elevate the stakes with this character, because each time the repercussions get stronger.
Yeah, the consequences really build up. It is honestly, Murina is one of those movies where, as quote unquote, like, slow as it is, it's very tense. It's very constantly tense. You're not exactly at the edge of your seat, but you're like...
I was gasping. That film is messy as fuck, and I was here for it.
I was there. You know what? You got really into it. It took me a little bit. I think that first act, I was like, okay, we're here. We're vibing.
I gave it 5 stars because I couldn't stop gasping. Each time something happened, I was like,
Yeah, I don't know. I wasn't gasping as much like during the first half, but that latter half, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, things are picking up.
It's a roller coaster that only goes up, my friend.
It was basically a more art house version of Shiva Baby.
Yeah,
I think because it's better Shiva Baby's
chaotic AF.
I like it more than Shiva Baby. That's all I will say.
Wow, is it that good? Or
Shiva Baby's not... excellent. I can't compare. Solid.
No, I know Shiva Baby is good.
No, Marina's great. Solid. No, Marina's solid.
Marina's really like, solid, though. I would watch it again. They're both here. It's just Shiva Baby is like... Shiva Baby's cocaine and Marina's like acid or something. I don't know. I don't really do drugs.
Take your pick.
It's like Shiva Baby's really, really, really tense, fast-paced, quick-witted, and then Marina's like...
I got a perfect wait. Okay, spiked hot chocolate versus coffee.
Which one is which?
Hot chocolate, Marina. Coffee, uh-huh. Shiva Baby. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah. Marina is literally like the pacing of it is just a constant in Jurassic Park where the water cup is constantly pounding and rippling because the T-Rex is nearing. It's just that, but for the whole movie. Yeah. And the T-Rex doesn't get there until the end.
Cole has to watch it.
I think Cole would like it.
Maybe I will.
It is indeed based.
Very based. Hell yeah. We're going to get into... I'm going to do two more little lightning rounds, and I think we can wrap it up. Because this is probably what people are here for anyway. Dune, based or not based?
Based.
Based.
How come? Why?
How could it not have been based?
I don't know. I haven't seen it, Cole.
People were worried.
Some people are concerned it's overhyped. What's that?
It is overhyped.
It depends how hyped you're buying into it being. I mean, I think it's not my favorite Villeneuve. Like, I can think of at least 3 Villeneuves that I like better than it. But, you know, maybe I think there's a chance that Dune Part 1 and Part 2 together can be one of Villeneuve's best films. Mm. But, I mean, just seeing it in the theater with, like, the IMAX and the whole spectacle of it was, like, pretty unparalleled for anything else you're going to see this year. I mean, not that there weren't other movies that were as riveting. Like, you know, Titan was the most riveting movie I've seen this year.
Titan
for Best Picture. Titan for Best Picture and Best Director, Best Actor, Best Act. We can go down the whole list, but
best sound because I was squirming.
The scream.
Best screenplay. The scream best machine. Editing.
Yeah, the editing was.
Titan really slayed 2021, and I really hope people don't sleep on it.
Back to Dune.
It's the best movie of the year,
right?
You're welcome for grabbing your ass.
I agree. It's the best movie of the year.
To see the jet screen. But yes.
But yeah, Dune was, I mean, it was story-wise, it didn't like transcend anything the way that I was led to believe the book did, but then apparently that's all in the second half, so I'm just waiting to see if it will like live up to that. But it was definitely not Villeneuve's most thought-provoking movie, but it was like, I mean, it was still like a fascinating, like, you know, spectacle to witness, so I was like pretty happy with
all
it.
All right.
Well, I agree basically with what Cole said, basically, right? It's a very... well-crafted exercise in science fiction emulation. It is Denis Villeneuve's worst film because of that, because there's not much leeway for him to actually like explore the more provocative themes. Of course, there's sort of like the whole entire American interventionism angle, where pretty much it's all about colonization and just about this supposedly superior planet trying to colonize a lesser planet because of a resource, which in this case is basically the equivalent of space cocaine. But that's not the point. So it's basically just that. But it's decently performed. It's gorgeously shot. It has incredible scope. I think it's one of the biggest films to ever premiere at the Toronto International Film Festival, which is very cool, in my opinion. And you know what? I had a good time. It's a very solid action blockbuster sci-fi spectacle. That is also Villeneuve's worst film. But hey, there was an attempt. He succeeded. But because of the direct kind of like base of the original route, there was no way for this to like technically be like.
Wait, did you just call it his worst film?
It is his worst film. Yeah.
I mean,
I said it.
I mean, to be fair, he called The French Dispatch low tier Wes Anderson.
And then he places this number three.
Yeah.
Because low tier Wes Anderson is still decent. It's still good.
Exactly. Same thing with Villeneuve. Worst Villeneuve.
There we go.
Is still
that good that was the point I was trying to make. It was like, well, there's like a higher standard for Villeneuve.
Exactly. There's a higher standard, but hey, you know what? Sure. Why not? But there is another film that I feel like you're going to mention in a little bit that may or may not be.
That's their grand finale, actually.
Exactly.
Next movie. You Are Not My Mother, based or not based?
Oh, not based.
I thought it was based. I fucked with it a lot.
Based.
It was just classic. I just found it, you know, it's just good old-fashioned horror. I just, that was a terrible accent, but it was, I liked it a lot. I think it was just, it was almost nostalgic in a way for me. I liked it. It was simple. It was well done. I'm here for it. So yeah, I think we could close with Silent Night, based or not based?
Oh, that's what we're closing with. We're not.
What did you think I was going to close with?
Last Night in Soho.
I didn't see it. It's going to be a very one-sided conversation.
I'm sorry.
Oh, right. Right. I forget people care about Last Night in Soho. Was it based or not based before we move on to our Silent Night rant?
Very conflicted, not based. It really hurts for me to say that as an Edgar Wright fan, but it's not based.
Cole, did you catch it at TIFF?
Yeah, I'm conflicted, but I think it's based. I like pretty much liked everything I saw, at least a little bit. So it was like a little, it was too much. It was way too much.
So it was not as, it was not as good as people wanted it to be.
It was really hyped. I think the trailer really, really, really just got everyone super excited. And you know what unhealthy expectations will do to you, as we have seen before and discussed on this podcast. Anyway,
did anyone see Seven Prisoners? By the way,
I tried to. So it's coming out November. I missed it.
That one was like really good, actually.
That one's gonna be on Netflix.
You know what?
Before
we get onto like the big finale, how about like we all spitball like underseen movies that were good and they're worth checking out. Just like list them all really quickly. Let's just do that. So first off, we've got Josie.
I like how you took over my host role.
Sorry.
Montana Story, Matar a la Bestia, or To Kill the Beast, Encounters, which people, okay, so Encounters, people were talking about it on Twitter and people were liking it, but I still don't think it got the attention it deserved. Medusa.
Medusa was good.
Medusa's based.
Medusa's big based. I forgot about Medusa.
Medusa is based.
Medusa was it was near perfect. And I think people should really check it out. Lo Invisible, The Invisible. I thought it was very good. It's an Ecuadorian movie. It's not very long. I really liked it. I'm not going to lie. It was a lot better than Lakewood. Because I think I saw Lakewood before I saw Lo Invisible. And it was bad. Lakewood was big, not based. Lo Invisible, The Invisible, very based. I was very pleasantly surprised. The Starling, very mid. That's all I'm gonna say. Starling, very mid. It's either based or not based for anyone else, but it was very much in between. Ooh, As in Heaven. People should check it out. As in Heaven is a good, good, good movie. I like that. Night Raiders one is not very based for me.
I thought that was based. I wanted
to like it a lot. I really tried. But I don't know why. It just felt like all the puzzle pieces were there. They were correct. The pieces were based. It was just the way that they were stitched together didn't feel very based to me. I don't know why. I don't know. I didn't vibe with it as much as I wanted to. And it was one of my most anticipated. I really wanted to see Night Raiders. Not as based as I wanted it to be. I digress. Yeah, I already mentioned the Mad Women's Ball. Go watch it. It's going to be... I don't know if it's going to be available internationally on Amazon Prime Video. I know it's going to be on Prime Video France soon. It's very good. If you can see it, the Mad Women's Ball, very good. It's a good double feature with Portrait of a Lady on Fire. Very based. Yeah, so shall we get into Silent Night, which was how I closed the festival, and Josie did as well.
Yes, Silent Night.
Silent Night is a really fun, bad movie.
Not based at all.
Sorry to this
I'm
man.
I'm shocked that people are actually like liking it. But sorry to this director, but you have a very strange anti-vax angle going on in your script. And not only that, your satire is very toothless to begin with. You don't have a mediator. All your characters are frivolous assholes. What is this? This is not entertainment. This is a circle jerk for your own personal tendencies. So, frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn about your Silent Night or Michael Bublé. All I want is a decent social satire that actually means fucking something.
I know.
And then the next time a white person makes a satire involving the top 1%, please make it actually worth
She liked my watching. Social reaction.
Thank you. Sincerely, all of us.
Now I feel better.
Sincerely, all of us.
Now I feel better about my reaction because I thought I was being mean. But really,
this is the meanest I'll be. Yeah.
Yeah, this film isn't handsome.
The thing that carried it for both Josie and I, because we saw it together, was the kid from Jojo Rabbit. he's a fantastic actor.
He's my
He should have been in a better movie.
Nominee for Best Performance from TIFF.
Which kid? Augie or like the main character?
The blonde. Yeah. Yeah, that's his name.
Roman Griffin.
The blonde kid.
Yeah, the Jojo Rabbit kid.
He was in Silent Night. And that kid is such a good actor. So just very based. Good for him.
Mm-hmm.
Good for him.
He really was. That's part of the film. It's just...
Yeah. The only one you could actually root for because he was the only one that had character development.
And then, of course, Lily Rose Depp was
he
there.
He was sort of the mediator.
She was just there. That's it.
The thing with Roman's character is that he was kind of the mediator in the story, but he's still an asshole. He was still, like, just as guilty. And just, like, the whole entire third act switched to, like, what if I don't take Redacted to help stop Redacted, right? I'm not going to spoil anything, because the twist is kind of clever.
Where?
In and of itself,
but no to tell. What was the twist? I'm waiting for it.
Seems like a very Silent Night for me, you know?
I can only commend it for not being too long. It was still too long, but it was what, an hour and a half? Hour and 20? It wasn't that long of a movie, but wow.
It was short. It was short, but like almost unbearable to watch. Like I was genuinely almost about to fall asleep by how just cringeworthy it was.
I think this is the only movie of the festival that I'll unapologetically like be mean to because I found so little to redeem about it. I really did.
Exactly. Just like especially that final shot.
It really is. I thought it was just so
my God.
You know what the movie is? It tries to be woke and then ends up just being super tone deaf. Very tone deaf film.
Exactly.
Yeah. And again, like, wow, this film has me short circuiting. Like, the way I was talking with Ileana when we watched this, like, there is a reason she specified that this was before the pandemic. Because, again, the anti-allegory.
It's funny right because, there. Like...
It's right there.
It's still, like, even without the pandemic, I would have been like, this is a little anti-vax. Because anti-vaxxers have been around for a long time. Hello.
It's the rhetoric.
They've just come out to really, really take center stage in this current environment that we are living on a global stage. However, regardless, the fact that, what's his name, Roman Griffin? Roman Griffin Davis, the fact that he filmed this, like, what, the same year that he did Jojo Rabbit?
No, it was during the pandemic that they shot it. Yeah, which also, yeah, they shot Silent Night during the pandemic. Yeah, which is even worse. It's even worse. She wrote it. She could have fixed it, but no. No, they shot it during the pandemic.
Wait, you never said if Dear Evan Hansen was based or not based.
Oh, it's based. It's very based. Honestly.
Right, you can't ask these two.
Genuinely. Okay, here's the thing. Listen, a lot of people are going to see the film as a blanketed two-faced mess. And you know what? Sure, reasonable. But one thing that it does actually capture quite well is the performativity. Is that the right word? I think it is. Of the high school culture. Right? It captures just the vapidness and just like how everyone is actually like secretly seeking for some sort of validation of the high school sphere. Like literally every single character in the movie. Like, not a single one, like, isn't, like, without its flaws, right? There's no, like, perfect angel in Dear Evan Hansen. And because of that, it just feels so grounded in what it understands about the high school experience and how much it fucking sucks that I honestly really connected to it. And especially, like, the mental health angle. Sure, it goes a little bit overboard in some moments, but I actually did think it was quite grounded and realistic and actually had the balls to say something, which is something quite admirable, genuinely. And the music is fun. I'm not even gonna lie. And Ben Platt, he was pretty decent. I don't care what people are saying, like, he looks like a 28-year-old, which is true because he is a 28-year-old. But
27. He's probably turned 28 by now. Whatever. Same age. Because we've been saying this for a while.
Yeah. Exactly. Same boomer. But the thing is, like, the point is Dear Evan Hansen is actually a very well-crafted film that actually has something meaningful to say and succeeds in its thematics, mainly because it understands what it's specifically trying to adapt. So, that's something that I don't say much about coming-of-age movies that are set in high school. So,
Dear Evan Hansen is better than Silent Night.
Yes, and it's better than Last Night in Soho, and I would even say it might be even
Gasp.
Better than this, but that's
wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
I actually do have it above Last Night in Soho, though.
Yeah. Yeah, Cole. See?
That's a little sad.
I understand that.
I liked it a lot on Broadway though. Like, so I mean, I thought it like had like a really solid source material and like very good like character development and gives a good amount of attention to each characters. And the new song that they added, which was the Anonymous Ones, the Amanda Stenberg song, I was like, I didn't remember if that was in the original or not, because it actually fit into the movie really well and it felt needed. So it was like props to actually doing a new song that felt necessary. It wasn't adapted the best. Like, it felt a little more flat on screen. Like, the directing was nothing special. Visually,
I do think there is, like, a solid... Yeah. I mean, like, I do think there was a little bit of an attempt, I guess. Of course, COVID restrictions, it was shot during the pandemic. That's one thing that you have to consider. The thing is, it doesn't look like it was shot during the pandemic. It seems like something that was actually shelved for quite some time, which is quite impressive, not going to lie, for the amount of shit that they actually do pull off in the movie. Just like thinking logistically and health concerns and that kind of deal. So genuinely, I think they tried their best with what they could do. It's not like, you know, Roma or French Dispatch level of coordination in terms of the actual visual eye candy. But at least there was an attempt at creating something not only sophisticated on a visual level, but something that actually means worth something and is worth actually watching.
Okay.
Which is what's important to me.
I respect that.
I mean, I want to watch it.
Thank you.
I feel like you're going to hate it, though. I don't know why.
Who knows? Who knows?
I don't know. The one that hates it is my roommate.
I do want to say like a few movies that we haven't mentioned, if that's okay.
Yeah,
just to like spitball real quick before we end. A Night of Knowing Nothing film from India, won the Amplify Voices Award. Fantastic film. Also one of the films that were, well, that was only in person only for some reason, but you know what, whatever, right? But A Night Knowing Nothing is terrific. It is a daring love letter to the film school experience, but not only that, it is genuinely a very cathartic exploration on sort of like the, how to put it, class solidarity. It's a very brilliant and kind of sort of poignant reflection on the art of the protest and sort of how the art of the protest kind of collides with the film school experience. Speaking of experiences, The Chihuahua Diaries by Miguel Gomez and the always great Maureen Fazendiero is now playing at the New York Film Festival, and it is unmissable. It is a fantastic rumination on the pandemic, on the film shoot experience with the new COVID protocols. It is hilarious. It is meta. It is sexy. Has a banger song in it. It's a high recommend from me. Speaking of sexy and funny, Official Competition is a fantastic dark comedy that is occasionally try hard, but very, very solid.
Cole, what are some honorable mentions you would like to wrap up with?
Well, some of these are more visible, but like, I really like The Humans. It was worth a second watch to sort of dissect it and understand like what it was really doing. And it worked really well for me. Spencer, one of the best I saw there. Rewatched Worst Person in the World. Love that movie. Rewatched Titan. That is the one that's my only 10 out of 10 this year now so far, is Titan. Seven Prisoners, gripping thriller. Like, you know, it's like a social thriller, beginning to end, edge of my goddamn bed, because I watched it in bed. 1 Second was good. Scarborough, which placed second for the People's Choice Award. Understandable how it did that, because it was a very absorbing, like, sort of mosaic of a town and like the characters in it. A little emotionally manipulative at times, but still, like, I was really involved. Even though it was 2 hours and 15 minutes, it went by quickly. Medusa was based. We kind of said that.
Right. All right. Thank y'all for that. I think we covered a lot. We've been here for quite a bit because TIFF was considerably heavier. It's a heavier program than Cannes because it was a lot to, you know, it was a buffet of film. Yes, we mentioned that it was a little bit quality over quantity over quality, but we saw some cinema, and there's a lot of fun stuff there, and I really hope that more films from TIFF, like, find distribution, because I feel like there's definitely, like we mentioned, it's quite a few films worth watching, for sure. So yeah, that's been our TIFF talk film talk roundtable, you know, part 2, Electric Boogaloo. Where can they find y'all? We'll start with you. Where can they find you, Cole?
They can find me on YouTube on the channel The Oscar Expert. I'm also on Twitter at expert_Oscar.
And we will link that down below as well. Where can they find you, David?
Hi, you can find me on Twitter at TICKTOCKANIMATE. Although today I kind of want to plug something else. The Ottawa International Animation Festival is now currently running. It is the biggest animation festival located in North America, and it's run by a nonprofit organization, the Canadian Film Institute. If you have a chance to support it, it's going virtually this year. They have a ton of great animated short film content that is, like, so impeccably choreographed and just programmed. And the programs are also very short too. They're only 60 minutes each, approximately. So give it a watch. Watch a short film program. And honestly, just sharing the love of cinema, that's what matters most to me. Instead of, like, social media or whatever. Disgusting. But anyways, next.
Josie, where can they find you?
You can find me at the Josie Marie on Twitter and Letterboxd. And you can find Film Posers at Film Posers basically everywhere.
you can tell it's almost 10 o'clock. You can find me at Captain Melendez on Instagram, Twitter, Letterboxd, and be sure to Find Full Circle Cinema on Twitter and Instagram, as well as Facebook. Be sure to subscribe to the channel because we have tons of really fun new content coming your way, including what you just saw today. Hopefully you saw it if you made it this far. Be sure to hit the notification bell because that's what YouTubers say, right? And
I don't like saying it.
Oh, yeah, I don't like saying it either, but, you know, traction, exposure, shameless True. Plugging. Oh, and what else? You can also not only watch Film Talk, you can listen to Film Talk on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, I think even Google Podcasts, and wherever else you listen to podcasts. So definitely listen to us there if you are on there, and leave us a rating and, you know, subscribe to those platforms. What else? I feel like there's something I wanted to mention before we head out, but you know what? If I forgot, it wasn't important enough.
You're going to tell everybody to leave it on overnight so that it can, like, stream all the way through.
Stream it for 24 hours so we can get on Billboard. Yeah.
Make a bot that gives it 5 stars. Just 5 stars all day long. You gotta give it the 5 stars.
Give it the 5 stars, like on Letterboxd. Log this episode on Letterboxd.
That would be maybe 5.
This is cinema. This is better than Belfast. This is cinema.
The bar is set very low, but thank you very much. Anyways, from our little virtual homes to yours, good night, and good day, whenever you're listening or watching this.
Or good evening.
Bye. Or good evening.
Yeah. Goodbye. Just had to throw that out there.
Bye.
Little wave. Bye. Little wave. Bye.